So, Norman, you're pretty well known, I guess, by our ABC audiences as a foreign correspondent, been in Russia until fairly recently, last year. Can you just tell us a bit about your life there as a foreign correspondent?
Look, it was very, I think the biggest thing to say is it's just very interesting. It's just from an intellectual point of view, it is a very captivating exercise to try to figure out some of these stories and the way to explain them to the Australian audience and why they're important. And in some cases, they're just plain interesting because, Russians, that part of the world, as somebody said to me before I left, they look like us. If you saw them in a cafe, you might think they're us, but they definitely don't think like us. And they do look at the world very differently. And it was constantly fascinating to find out what those differences are. That being said, Moscow can be a tough city to live in, especially for Australians. I'm from Canada. I'm used to the winter weather, and I'm used to gray, dark weather in the winter. But it is cold, and it is dark in the winter. And you combine that with some of the elements of Russian culture, which are not necessarily so open. People don't greet you with huge smiles on their faces. It can be, a difficult place.
When you arrive there as a new correspondent, I mean, you have an incredibly big patch to cover there. How do you go about starting to make contacts and that sort of thing?
Well, I think any foreign correspondent would be lying if they didn't admit that a huge part of their success is due to the people they work with, either the fixers or the producers. In my case, I worked in an office that had an excellent producer who worked with me, who had lots of ideas and lots of good contacts. And the whole team we had in the office was great. Office manager would often come in, she'd heard things, she'd read things on Russian language websites that were difficult, almost impossible for me to understand. And people, social media plays a big role in this these days because people see things on Twitter or they read things, especially in a country like Russia, where you're not going to see a lot on the broadcast media. You really need to rely on social media to pick up a lot of the good story tips, good ideas, things that are happening. But there's a second element to this, and that's I arrived in Moscow after spending 3.5 years at Bangkok, and I'm married to another ABC journalist who happened to be the correspondent. She was posted to Bangkok, and I went along with her, and I freelanced. And, there's a big, big difference between a bureau like Bangkok and a bureau like Moscow. Bangkok has a huge demand from Australian audiences because Australians know Bangkok, they know the city, many of them go to Thailand. They're very interested in things that are happening there. And my wife, Karen Percy, arrived there just before the coup in 2006, and she was extremely busy, a lot of demand. Russia is very different. Russia is not as high on the radar for Australians. I was there as a video journalist. So the biggest difference is it was mostly us pushing stories to Sydney, trying to get Sydney interested in stories. Very rarely were we taking calls on things that people wanted stories about. So it's a bit of a different challenge, but it does work better for a video journalist because video journalists who are shooting and cutting their own stories, there's only so much work you can do at that pace before you sort of burn out.
In that sense, you have probably left at the wrong time with the Olympics happening now and also all the unrest in Kiev. What's your take on that?
Well, hindsight's 2020, of course, but it's almost an assured thing that when the ABC made the decision to not replace me as a correspondent, because they wanted to put a second correspondent in the Middle East, which was a very sound decision because there's so much happening in the Middle East. But of course, it's Murphy's Law, isn't it? As soon as I pull out of Russia, Edward Snowden, you have all these events happening in Ukraine. You had all the Pussy Riot pardons and Mikhail Khodorkovsky was pardoned. But, specifically what's happening in Ukraine now is really the end game of this political tension that's been brewing in the country for years. We reported on much of it when we were in Moscow. We followed very closely the trial of Yulia Tymoshenko. Australians may remember, if they're soccer fans, before the 2012 Euro Championships, there was a lot of talk about whether they should go ahead, whether Western leaders would visit Ukraine because the former prime minister was jailed. And this was the issue that eventually led to President Yanukovych breaking off ties, the economic association ties with the European Union, and throwing his hat in with Moscow, because in the end he refused to bow to pressure to release Yulia Tymoshenko and to allow a more free liberal democratic system. He decided that he was going to basically throw in his lot with Russia, and that's when the protests started in November. And of course, now we've seen in recent days how they've turned very violent and deadly on the streets of Kiev.
And on the Olympics, there have been a few problems with the weather and snow conditions, but also you know, a few protests from athletes about the government's anti-homosexuality laws. How do you see, or do you see the public and the government as viewing the Olympics as a success?
I do. I'm from Canada, so I've been watching a lot of Olympic coverage. I also listen to a lot of Canadian sports programs via podcast. I download them. And the reports that are coming back from Sochi, from the athletes, are almost universally positive. It's very well-run games. The Russians have proved, even though they spent more than $50 billion, that they built competent facilities, that things have been run well. Certainly less organizational problems than some games in Western countries. And, you know, there was this tendency of the Western media to, it sort of became a bit of a pile-on in the days before Sochi, not only over things like gay and lesbian rights, but, you know, people tweeting in pictures of, you know, bathrooms that had two toilets in them, and a bobsledder got stuck in his room and had to burst his way out. And they were really focusing on the negative. But, you know, I do think, until a few days ago, I did think that the Russians would regard this as ultimately a success, because they hosted a successful Olympics. But two things have happened, and I know I don't want to equate death and bloodshed with anything that happens in the sporting arena. But first of all, obviously the events in Kiev have cast a pall over the games. The arrest, not the arrest, but the Cossacks disturbing an attempted Pussy Riot disturbance and being filmed whipping members of the band Pussy Riot, that obviously is a terrible image for Russia, not what they wanted. But I do think most Russians will regard their failure to win the ice hockey men's gold medal as the games are a failure. And I hate to be that blunt, but as a Canadian, I recognize what that feeling is about. I mean, if Canada had not won the gold medal in Vancouver, a lot of Canadians, no matter how well Canada did, would have regarded that Olympics as a failure. And the fact that Russia was not able to bring home the gold medal, I know many Russians will be very, very upset.
And I guess a bit closer to home, what's brought you to Wodonga today?
We have some information that our audience will be learning about a little later next week, but it concerns drownings. And I think it's going to surprise people about the numbers of drownings and the dangers of rivers as opposed to beaches. Obviously, we in Australia consider, when you think of the stereotypical image of Australians in the summer, they're at the beach, there they are swimming, and people get into trouble. And that does happen, of course. But I think people will be surprised to learn the numbers of people who get into trouble. In this region, obviously, they're very aware because there have been a lot of high-profile incidents. But in the rest of Australia, they may not know the dangers posed by rivers, dams, lakes in inland Australia, which do claim far too many lives. That's the story I'm working on while I'm here in Albury, Wodonga.